The Midweek Drive Team, four words which signify quality and all that's best in audio entertainment.
The grass is always greener on the other side. A phrase which we may well do well to remember and focus on, especially given this upcoming topic in which we see that recently over 12 million adults have spent more than £200 in a bid to keep up with their friends. Indeed, 15% have said they've spent over £500. So clearly we might well have a situation whereby the outgoings are in excess of the incomings when it comes to finance. Best person to speak to with respect to this obviously has to be personal finance expert Sue Haywood. How are you, Sue?
Hello, I'm very well, thank you, Alex.
Excellent. Now, I mean, this particular research that has been conducted definitely suggests that, you know, people need to possibly just take a couple of stages back. I mean, you know, it's Top Cashback who've commissioned this. It's How Britain Spends, etc. It's not really a good sign if you feel as though you're having to constantly panic about, oh, how can they possibly afford this? Oh, I've got to actually buy the next round of drinks. I've got to do this as well, and so on. Especially if, again, it is leading to stress and anxiety.
You're so right. And I think that, you know, the danger is when we look at others and we start to think, gosh, how are they affording the holidays, the meals out, that new kitchen? What we actually don't know is how our friends, family, neighbours, you know, what about their spending habits? We don't know whether the amount they're spending is going on credit cards, whether it's being funded from savings, or how they're doing that. And I think the danger is that if we start to aspire to other people's spending habits, it can be very easy to get into that cycle of overspending, dipping into your own savings. And I think really the focus needs to be on getting your own finances on track and concentrating on what you've got coming in, what you've got going out, and balance the books, you know, and not worry about anyone else's spending, because what we none of us know is how they're funding that, or whether they are, unfortunately, you know, racking up credit card debt.
I saw recently that in the next possibly couple of years, we'll be seeing the first trillionaires. We've already billionaires or so last century. Now we're dealing with trillionaires. I think Elon Musk is on the road to actually go for that. But most of us, unless we've won the lottery or had some sort of success, etc., are having to live within a budget. And presumably that, you know, put quite simply, means that you do ensure that your outgoings don't exceed your incomings. I mean, is that fundamentally what is at the heart of doing a budget, Sue?
Definitely. And I always say to people, you know, doing a budget may not be the most exciting task on the planet. It may not be something that has you leaping out of bed on a Saturday morning to do, but it really is so important, and particularly so in the current financial climate. And it can be something as simple as, you know, a pen and a piece of paper, or if you prefer to use spreadsheets or money apps. But as you say, you need to look at what you've got coming in, income, pensions, benefits, what you've got going out. And also to factor in over the course of a year. So on a monthly basis, you may not be paying for your car insurance, but of course, it's one of those big spends that comes up once a year, or the house insurance. Look at what you've got. Make sure that you have more coming in than you do going out. And if you haven't, then you need to look at ways to cut back, which can be anything from sort of switching mobile or broadband providers, or just being more savvy with spending. I mean, we've seen a lot of people using loyalty cards, using voucher codes, using cashback, which is a way of earning as you spend. So through sites like Top Cashback, you can do that. And it's just ways of making every penny count, really. And even simple things like arranging for regular bill payments or direct debits to leave your account just after payday, because that way money comes into your account. If all your bills go out within a couple of days, you then know the amount left is what you've got to last you for the rest of the month, rather than having that sort of haphazard approach where sometimes one bill goes out one day, one another, and you suddenly realise you've forgotten actually the broadband bill does go out at the end of the month, and that's going to take you into the red. So I think actually just sometimes it's a bit of legwork, but making sure that you arrange for those bill payments to go out just after payday can actually sort of pay dividends in the long run.
You mentioned Top Cashback, of course. That's been established for over 18 years. It's got more than 14 million members. Would that be something you would advise folk to actually think, if you're looking to, it's the old classic cliche, if you look after the pennies, the pounds will look after themselves. You look to actually see what deals are actually out there when indeed you're making your purchases, luxury or otherwise.
I mean, the cashback site, it can be a real way of earning as you spend because you're not spending any more than you would usually do. I mean, the way it works, as probably most people know, is that you sign up, free account, and you use it then as the gateway to going online to all your usual shops. And you may earn a percentage back of the amount you spend. In some cases, if you are buying bigger ticket items like insurance or switching broadband deals, you may get a flat fee for doing so. And it can be a way, if you're genuinely buying a product or item and actually earning some money at the same time, in a similar way to cashback credit cards as well. If you're using them and buying something you genuinely want, then you're earning a bit as you spend. So I think it's just a way of making sure that you try and, as you say, make every penny count and look at ways to sort of, maximize the money going into your account.
The report How Britain Spends also revealed that there are almost a third of us who fret over money worries at least once a week. A quarter actually lose sleep over money concerns. And yet, as we said, more than half haven't sought professional advice to support them. In the event that people are listening to this, Sue, and they are in one of those positions of thinking, well, yeah, that describes me to a T, would you solidly advise them to actually seek out some professional help and assistance?
Yes, and I think there are so many amazing free organisations out there like Citizens Advice, National Debtline, Step Change. You don't pay them any money. You can either speak to them on the phone. In some cases, you might be able to speak to them face to face, and they can give you advice and help, even when it comes to prioritising debts. Because if you do owe money and everybody's shouting, ringing, writing, and wanting the money, sometimes it can be hard to know which are the best ones to prioritize. And even the help out there, for example, if you're struggling to pay your council tax or your energy bill, there is help available from the energy companies. Your local council may have discounts. You may even be entitled to certain discounts that you don't realize. For example, if you live alone or if you're disabled, you may be entitled to discounts on your council tax. So it's really important to actually, ask for help simply because it is available and is out there. And I know sometimes for some people, it's not always something that comes easily and naturally, but it's worth doing it simply because people there can help you.
Topcashback.co.uk, best website to go to actually look more in detail at this report.
Absolutely. And you can also see the full report there as well as a lot of sort of money guides and spending tools as well.
And from your own perspective, Sue, how can people follow your wonderful life and times? Are you in the social mode of Instagram and such like?
Absolutely. I'm on Twitter at Sue Hayward Media.
Or even X these days, but there we are.
Absolutely.
Life
I've seen it
continues.
a hundred times already.
It's all there. Sue Hayward, personal finance expert extraordinaire. Huge thanks, and keep on keeping on.
Thank you very much.
The role of the mentor, clearly a critical part of a whole range of activities and so on, particularly in the world of business. And so we're delighted to actually welcome the head of business banking at Santander UK, Susan Davis, to the programme today. How are you, Susan?
I'm fantastic, Alex. How are you?
Very great. But in terms of the mentor, can I turn to you first and say, can you recall in your own wonderful, stellar career examples where basically you've also benefited from a mentor? And indeed, you could actually say to that mentor, I just don't understand this.
Oh, absolutely, Alex. I can recall so many times in my career when I thought it would really benefit me right now to have somebody just to be a sounding board, somebody that could help me with the tricky questions or maybe the questions that I'm afraid to ask. And I think I can recall probably about 20 years ago when I was aspiring to sort of, climb the career ladder, I had a mentor that really just encouraged me to ask the simple questions. So I really encourage that anyone who is thinking of getting a mentor does that. And the Santander research really shows that two-thirds of people have benefited and have said that it's made such a difference by asking for help in their career or getting a mentor.
And that's key, as you rightly say, to this particular research by Santander. We also see that more than a third of people have had a situation in their careers where they've actually regretted not asking for help. Now, is that due to an ego problem? Because we all know the classic tale, and again, it's gender specific, but it reverts to males who notoriously we have difficulty effectively reading the instruction manual, or we don't want to ask for help because it's seen as an impingement on our abilities, etc. Is it just the ego that's at work here that effectively means that we're cutting our nose off to spite our face?
I think there's a couple of things at play there. I mean, for men, yes, certainly there can be some gender differences there, that there's a fear of maybe looking silly or stupid in front of your peers or your manager, that you think, I should know this. You know, I should know the answer to this. And you're afraid to put your hand up and ask that question. And certainly the research shows that that is one of the, you know, one of the fears that people have. Mm-hmm. I think with females, and speaking candidly about myself, there's sometimes that imposter syndrome that you think, oh gosh, oh, you know, should I be here? And, you know, am I, you know, am I going to expose myself by asking for help? So I think there's a lot of things at play there that puts people off from just doing it and asking for it.
Well, again, it's interesting to see that female business owners also struggle to ask for help. Figures suggesting that double the number of women were uncomfortable asking for help compared to that of men. So, I mean, an interesting line there. Again, is it that whole essence of, you know, we feel as though, oh, this is a silly question, without realizing that there is no such thing as a silly question?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is, you know, getting that message across that asking for help is not a burden, that there really is no stupid question, and that it is an investment in your growth. And, you know, that's why we've launched this program and successfully taken 750 mentees into the program over the last 6 years, to help build that confidence and reassurance about the help that you ask for early in your career or early when you set up your business can be instrumental to your success in the future. So, yeah, it's really important that people recognise and understand that it is such a valuable thing to do.
Are there any points in one's career trajectory where you actually feel as though, well, I'm at this particular stage, I've done very well, which is all great, and therefore, if I have a mentee and they ask the question that I can't or don't know the answer to, that maybe I then sort of feel as though I'm in an awkward position about not being able to ask the question of somebody who might know the answer. I mean, what I'm saying is do we have that kind of collective notion where it doesn't really matter where you are, there's always that possibility of being a little bit shy of raising questions, even if it's just something to do with, say, new technology, for instance?
Yeah, I think there's always that danger that you don't, you know, you don't want to feel like you're exposing yourself. Interestingly, what the research shows is that typically younger people feel more comfortable and confident about asking for help. They don't feel that same burden in the way that sometimes older colleagues or business owners do. So yeah, I think it is that. That by asking questions, by being curious, you can find out so much, and it can avoid some of the, you know, the pitfalls of not being successful in the future. And that, I suppose, it's that old saying of a problem shared is a problem halved. And just don't be afraid to, you know, to ask the question or seek or find out who might be able to help you.
I always preferred that to the other maxim that came out of the 1960s and Patrick McGowan's work for a series called The Prisoner. Questions are a burden to others, answers a prison to oneself.
That's of course. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there's a range of support out there for, you know, anybody that is thinking about getting a mentor. As I mentioned, we've launched a successful program again this year. We've done this for the last 6 years, and what we found is we've really raised that confidence, particularly of female business owners that would have been maybe shy, maybe uncertain about asking questions or seeking that support and help. But by, you know, giving them the tools and support that's there, people can head to our Santander Breakthrough website to find out more. That there is, you know, ways that you can get help and build a community and network of support, which I think is incredibly invaluable for business owners, which, you know, is, you know, it's lonely. Running a business is lonely.
Are there any cultural differences that maybe we've discovered between, shall we say, the confidence or self-confidence of Western countries like the USA, Canada, and so on, as compared to I don't know, countries in Africa, China, and so on and so forth? Or is that something which is going to be the survey and the next survey we consider?
I think it is a possibility. Yeah, we could do future surveys to see some of the cultural differences. I know that we've, worked with programs looking at female founders of color, for example, and there are some differences in terms of where people, women in particular, look for support or find comfort in finding support. So there is sometimes differences there, and I think the more that we explore and find out some of those subtle differences. We want to build ranges of supports and tools that helps everybody. But that might be something in the future we explore in a bit more detail, of course.
Absolutely. I'll just remind people once again, Susan, that the best place to go to find out more details about this particular topic, of course, in terms of the Santander Breakthrough Women Business Leader Mentoring Program.
Thanks, Alex. Well, to find out more or apply before the 19th of February, which is the deadline, people can head to our Santander Breakthrough website.
Susan Davis, Head of Business Banking at Santander UK. A huge thanks, and keep asking those questions, Susan.
I will do. Thanks, Alex. Have a great day.
Time for more movie thoughts, reviews, and royal commentary from Richard Fitzwilliams and Natasha Wanton on the Midweek Drive.
Sir, I don't understand.
That's glaringly apparent.
I can't fail this class.
Oh, don't sell yourself short, Mr. Coates. I truly believe that you can.
Every year at Barton Academy, students, faculty, and staff depart the campus for a two-week winter break. But there are always an unfortunate few who have nowhere to go for the holidays. They're known as the holdovers.
Mr. Hunnam.
Hello, Mary.
I heard you got stuck with babysitting duty this year. How'd you manage that?
You know, he used to be a student, right?
Yeah, that's why he knows how to inflict maximum pain on us.
I thought all the Nazis were hiding in Argentina.
Stifle it, Tully.
You just earned yourself a detention, sir.
Being here with you is already one big detention.
Son of a bitch, that's another detention.
Do you think I want to be babysitting you? No, I was praying your mother would pick up the phone or your father would arrive in a helicopter or a flying saucer.
My father's dead.
You don't tell a boy that's been left behind at Christmas that nobody wants him? What's wrong with you?
There's nobody here, okay? So you stay out of my way, and I'll stay out of yours.
Let me sleep.
Now, most of the kids dislike you, pretty much hate you. Teachers, too. You know that, right?
I find the world a bitter and complicated place, and it seems to feel the same way about me. I think you and I have this in common.
I don't think I've ever had a real family Christmas like this before.
Thank you, Mary.
You're welcome.
History is not simply the study of the past. It is an explanation
of the present.
See, when you say it that way,
and throw in some pornography, it's a lot easier to understand.
No matter what you are.
I'd like to propose a toast to my two unlikely companions.
Anders! Are you trying to lick down my shirt?
No.
Yes.
You're gonna get me fired.
This is your Rubicon.
Do not cross
the Rubicon.
The Holdovers.
Ouch! Jesus! But they're on us!
Well, I don't know. I mean, Natasha Wanton clearly doing her stuff in Australia. We had two words of advice there. Well, more than two words, of course, to experts, really providing experts for commentary on mentoring and indeed financial changes and charges as well from that point of view. But clearly, the message that we need to actually held over to, as we're now actually in February, of course, as far as the Midweek Drive Morning Edition folk are actually concerned. I know if you're listening to it podcast, it might still be January. But for the February listeners, well, things have motored on accordingly. And although fear is still based in the Netherlands, and rightly so, and Natasha Wanton still based in Australia, and rightly so,
I don't know, Natasha, have you ever actually crossed the Rubicon? Have you ever actually looked to deal with a complete unusual soul in the Holdovers, a name that's actually given to children who are at school in the United States who have nowhere to go over the holiday period, so they have to stay and endure Paul Giacometti and others through the whole process? What say you, Natasha?
Kind of cuts a little bit close to home in that I work in long hours daycare. So we do, you always feel bad for that child that's in 6:30 in the morning to 6:30 at night. And you always get your regulars, which you sort of are always like, everyone's going home and they're like, where's my mommy? And I'm like, they'll be coming soon. But yeah, that kind of gives me that kind of vibes. But no,
Are you never tempted, Natasha, to turn around and say, she's not coming for you because you've been a very bad person and she's never going to see you ever again?
I don't think we generally encourage that kind of conversation with our young three-year-olds. I don't think that would go down too well.
Tough love.
I do want to see this movie, though. I'm excited to hear what Richard has to say about it. I've kind of been watching this since the first trailer came out, looking to see how the reviews go. So I'm interested in this one.
Thea, does such a thing happen in the Netherlands, or is it a case of, no, of course not? In the Netherlands, we only have a NATO advisor who basically has said we should all prepare for war with the Soviet Union within the next 20 years. Mobilize now.
No, I mean, when you go to school, you just go, you don't really have that, you stay over at a school and then return home for the weekend. I mean, that doesn't really happen here. So also not for the holidays, you just go home. And only, like Natasha said, we have daycare here. And I mean, personally, I never experienced it because my mom works at home. So she was always there. So it was...
And Fia, let's face it, you wouldn't be left alone completely. I mean, now how could anybody sort of ever sort of do that? Be hopeless. Richard, on the other hand, I don't know, possibly myself. Anna, what about yourself in Romania or Bucharest? Or is it a case of, no, once again, just like the Netherlands, we care for our children. We don't send them away to school like Gordonston.
Well, contrary to the popular belief, we don't have that. And our daycares are really nice. And when my mom used to leave me at daycare, I would have cried for like 2 to 3 hours because I always missed her so much and I'm so used to being with her all the time. But our daycares are quite nice. I mean, the last time I've been in one was like 15 years ago, but they were nice even then. So, yeah.
Well, there we are. And let's not get started on what used to happen in Romanian orphanages under Ceausescu. Otherwise, that's a whole new story for a whole new time. Richard Fitzwilliams, what's your take on this? Is it a case of, yes, you saw Alex Levchuk portraying in that teacher, that curmudgeonly soul who basically would fail people on a regular basis? Did you say, yes, that is obviously the person that I see in this whole movie?
Well, you know, Alex, now you've mentioned it, I have to say that never occurred to me before, but now you've mentioned it, and somebody strict, somebody who's generally disliked, but somebody who is nonetheless not the sort of person who'd waive the rules to help, for example, the son of alumni do better and get elsewhere. So, you know, he's got a certain integrity. Could this be your good self? Well, I have to say, it didn't occur to me. Nonetheless, this is it could be called a comedy drama because it is, in parts, very, very funny. But there's also a pathos, there's a sadness in a lot of this film too. It's one of those movies set at Christmas time, which I hope will become a sort of staple viewing. I mean, I know Love Actually has taken off in recent years, and I mean, quite rightly.
This is much better than Love Actually, Richard.
Oh, well, yeah, it's a wonderful film. You've seen it, have you?
I'm just saying, just by the trailer alone, it's better than Love Actually.
Well, I mean, the trailer, I haven't seen the trailer. I never watch trailers. But the college, and we're in 1970, we are in Barton Academy. It's a New England boarding school. And it closes over Christmas. But there are individuals who are unfortunate in one way or another who have to remain there. And it has to be said that, there are several students to begin with, but the rich parent of one of them takes the others on a school, on a skiing outing. So essentially, we are left with Paul Hunnam, played by Paul Giamatti, very, very strict, not much liked by, well, nobody seems to like him much. And also he has a very strange smell about him. That's not his fault. It's a certain condition he suffers from. He has, unquestionably, he has integrity. But apart from that, you know, the fact that he's fascinated by Carthage, he's interested in pursuing studies in that area and so on. But he's forced to supervise holdover students left on a campus for holiday. He's not going to cozy up to his headmaster and help a former, son of a former alumni get better marks. And who is landed with him? Well, there's a cafeteria administrator, an African-American, Mary Lamb, and she is mourning the very sad death of her son, who's been killed in Vietnam. And also, there is Angus Tully. His mother's decided she'll go on another honeymoon and with the second husband and leave him high and dry. He resents it. He desperately resents it. And he keeps Hunnam rather occupied, including a priceless occasion when Hunnam actually chases him through the school and he dislocates his shoulder. And that means that they have to leave the college, because in reality, Hunnam is pretty tough on them. He believes that Christmas is a time for study. I'm sure, Alex, you would go along with that.
All the time, absolutely essential. You know, you should study over Christmas Eve, study over Christmas Day, study over Boxing Day, study, study, study.
And also exercise. You would go along with that as well.
Of course. Cold healthy ups. Mind, healthy body, Richard. Mens sana in corpore sanus.
Everyone will draw their own conclusions to the similarities between you and this with this character, but nonetheless.
Apart from the smell, I don't know, but still.
Well, perhaps not. However, Angus is really frustrated. I mean, firstly, it's a question of getting Hunnam to understand that there's such a thing as Christmas. I don't think that you're quite in that category, you know, a matter of a Christmas tree, this sort of thing. Angus wants a field trip. That field trip is an excuse to get to Boston. When in Boston, and this is one of the clever things with this movie, actually, throughout it, you're getting clues as to something that there's quite a lot that's rather interesting in Hunnam's past. When they meet one of Hunnam's ex-classmates when he was at Harvard, they discover a great deal more. And then, well, Hunnam allows Angus to go and see his father in a sanatorium. What happens there? And what, indeed, is Mary doing in Boston, seeing her sister? But she's pretty desolate, and strange things happen at a party, which the deputy headmistress gives, and they're all asked to. So it's full of events, but what is so wonderful about this film is not only the performance of Paul Giamatti has the sort of hangdog look, I have to say. He's quirky, he's infuriating, he's strict, he's desperately narrow-minded, but there is, underneath it all, some sort of humanity struggling to get out when he's not dealing with the classics. And given the fact that Angus turns out to be rather an interesting character, and Mary is indeed a deeply touching, a poignant figure, and how they get together and survive during this fraught festive season, It makes for a wonderful movie directed by Alexander Payne, who did Sideways, which also starred Paul Giamatti, and indeed is rather a classic. I do recommend it to everyone. That is very, very funny. And here they're good performances, not only by Davine Joy Randolph as Mary, who is walking the supporting actress awards everywhere, but also Dominic Sessa as Angus. He was nominated. We'll be dealing out with the BAFTAs in a few minutes.
His first ever movie, Richard, and his first ever role. He didn't even have to audition. Effectively, he was straight. He selected directly for that for the director. Now, that's what you call winning the lottery at age 21.
It is indeed, and with good reason. And, you know, from the janitor to the headmaster to the student who torments Angus until he's whisked away on the skiing holiday, there is a super supporting cast. And visually, it's very deft. It also conjures up the atmosphere of what a boarding school of this type was like half a century ago. I mean, it's not a question of finding fault with this film. It's just a question of saying it, urging everyone to go and see this movie. 10 out of 10, Alex, before you even ask.
Sarah Huntley, already the controversy as to whether this will ever replace Love Actually. It certainly could never replace It's a Wonderful Life as the festive movie. Is this one that you're going to actually say, yeah, I must see that? Or is it a case of you'll put it on hold?
No, I'm going to say it's a must see because, you know, Fitzwilliams has given it 10. And I also think that to me, I haven't seen it, but from what I'm getting from what Richard says is perhaps one of the messages from the film is you don't always have to have the Christmas you think you're going to have a good Christmas. And perhaps it's embracing change and learning and taking on other things that actually we all sort of think we want the same thing all the time, but perhaps we don't. And perhaps this is other people learning from other people. And I kind of think maybe this film, that's what it's telling us. I don't know till I get to see it.
Sarah, some people just want a furry hot water bottle for Christmas, and that's all they need. Fia, what about yourself? Is this something which you think, yeah, this is going to go down a storm in the Netherlands, even though we can't possibly agree with how education used to be in the United States?
No, I agree. I mean, this seems like a very sweet movie, but also very interesting, and how you learn from others. And I mean, it's actually been on my list for a while, and now that we're talking about it today, I'm very eager to watch it and to start watching it. So
okay, well, if it's been on Fia's list, it might well have been on Anna Koskinen's list as well. Anna, I think you're speaking to us from a coffee store somewhere in Lincoln at present, but is this one for you?
Yes, I was actually looking online, and it says that it's partially comedy, partially drama, which I find it interesting, especially because I like comedy movies, because who doesn't like to have a good laugh? And, you know, it's something you should watch. Richard gives it a 10. And then Sarah says it has such an interesting message where even if you don't expect things to go well, they somehow still go well. So, yeah, I think I will watch it. I'm not sure when, but surely it's something you want to watch.
Okay, which leaves Natasha. Has your viewpoint changed, Natasha? Is it a case of, well, I don't know, with Richard giving something a 10, maybe he's just getting soft in his advancing years. I might give it a 4 or something. Or is it still for you?
I'm not. It doesn't look like a 4. It looks like a good movie. It looks like a lot of people sort of seem to be flocking towards these comedy dramas at the minute. And I can see why, that sort of slice of life, that normality, that sort of feel, especially around a Christmas movie. I feel like that's going to be a really good little like feel good, even though it does have those darker points that Richard sort of hinted at with the, you know, the loss and through the cafeteria worker and obviously her tragedy that she's going through with her family. I feel like it would be a really good, it's going to leave you feeling good about life, I hope. That's the vibe that I'm getting. We'll see. I do really want to see this movie. It's just trying to find time at the minute to see it. But it has been on my list. As I said, I've been tracking it since the first trailer came out. So hopefully I will get to see it sometime soon.
Did it make you feel good, Richard? Or did you actually come out thinking, well, I'll give it a 10, but ultimately it's under sufferance?
Well, I mean, in fact, I would mention, Alex, it not only made me feel good, but also, you know, you feel pretty good when you hear dialogue of that category when the direction is as good as it is, and probably above all, I mean, it's the New York Times has tipped Paul Giamatti for the Best Actor Oscar. Now, he would be very lucky to get it, but Cillian Murphy, you know, and Bradley Cooper, it is going to be a very, very close run thing, but I do think he's got a chance because it's such a wonderful performance. Probably he won't, but a movie this, you know, this classy. I didn't expect it to be very good because I loved Sideways. So yeah, I mean, it's a wonderful movie. I also roared with laughter at certain scenes. You know, that too is very cathartic.
Well, there we are. Meanwhile, D'Artagnan is forced to join forces with Milady to save Constance, who is kidnapped before his eyes. But as war is declared and Athos, Porthos and Artemis have already joined the front, a secret from the past shatters old alliances. Yes, we're due to another part two, another sequel, the Three Musketeers Milady movie.
Yes, and interesting this, because I was very fond of the Three Musketeers when a child. And quite interesting, when I was reviewing Napoleon, I mean, it wasn't a speaking part, but I noticed that there was a one of Napoleon's marshals was black. There was a person of colour who was in that, who had held that rank. Napoleon famously or infamously racist in some respects. Nonetheless, this was intriguing. And I wondered who it was. I've discovered that it was the father of Alexandre Dumas who wrote The Three Musketeers, a book, as I say, I very much liked. I saw a film years ago which had Milady losing her head, I have to say, in silhouette, and it affected me quite a lot as a child at the time. Well, this is a very successful series in France. The reason it's so successful, well, one of the reasons is its cast. Vincent, the three musketeers, Athos, Porthos, and Aramis, are joined by a fourth, D'Artagnan. Well, Vincent Cassel is Athos, Pierre Marmont is Porthos, Francois Civil is D'Artagnan, and Romain Duris, who used to be in every second French film going at one time, is Aramis. It's very interesting how the first film worked, because it was one of these sort of rollicking, spectacular type movies, which was entertaining and not too silly. Point is that the plots have to or should be relatively reasonably linked to what could happen. And the problem with this is it's a sequel, and sometimes sequels go off. The first movie was The Three Musketeers D'Artagnan, and I thought it worked very well. It has to be mentioned that there's the king and queen, and the three musketeers are great supporters of the king, played by Louis Garrel, and the queen, played by Vicky Cripps, who I thought was so marvellous playing the Empress Sissi in Corsage. Well, Cardinal Richelieu, of course, is the villain, and he's always involved in plots of one sort or another. Now, without going into all the, because it's one of those swashbuckling movies, and yes, it's does it work well? Evergreen is Milady, and Milady was the wife of one of the musketeers, and, well, he thought she was dead. She wasn't. She was branded, however. That comes into it. My goodness me, there's very little that doesn't come into it. The numbers of people who plot with doors open so that D'Artagnan's love, Constance, played by Lena Coudray, hears what's happening. I have to say also the numbers of weird scenes where Milady appears when she tries to seduce you, beware, because on the one hand, she may extend her arm around you, and on the other, she's almost certain to have a dagger. Now, that can work.
That's been mostly my experience, Richard, with women over the years. Sorry.
I didn't know that, Alex, but I am sure that the film could have learnt from Perhaps your advice, certainly your advice perhaps on how to get a plot that was convincing and not too silly, because the trouble with this is that some of the scenes are so ridiculous that my attention started to wander. So having been very entertained by the first movie, I found this a rather poor and rather silly sequel directed by Martin Bourboignon. It's done tremendously well in France, and I've included it because, you know, I try and get a sort of spread of different types of movies, and this is certainly one of them. Again, the same plot involving the Duke of Buckingham, possible English intervention, a French civil war, the wars of religion, and frankly, a lot of scenes involving Eva Green as Milady. As I say, she's constantly...
Well, that's why it's called Milady in the movie title. You expect to see her featured quite a lot.
You do indeed, and you'd expect to see her featured, I would suggest, in a lot of scenes that make a bit more sense or a bit more realistic than this. Having said that, it's not harmful, and I might see the sequel because there are a whole series of them, but I certainly wouldn't go off to a fourth one. If you know, this is not like, say, The Hunger Games, where you do get gripped by a good deal of it. It's something that the first one was very good and it was reasonably realistic. This is deserting realism, and the battle scenes aren't that hot either. So
a seven then. A six.
I think a five.
Clearly, Count of Monte Cristo has got it all ends up when it comes to Alexandre Dumas. Anna, the Three Musketeers Part Two, Milady, yes. One for yourself?
I don't even need to let you finish. Yes, I've read my grandpa was reading to me novels from Alexandre Dumas when I was little, and I've read them myself when I was 13 and 14, The Count of Monte Cristo, The Three Musketeers, 20 years after everything. I am just so in love with the novels and every movie as well, and not particularly because all of them are the best movies ever, but because you get the feeling and the memories from before. So I will most likely watch this one as well. And I'm actually so excited. I was so excited since you sent us the emails with everything, and I cannot wait to watch it. Even if Richard said that it's not the best movie, I'm still looking forward. I watched every single movie with the Three Musketeers, every single movie.
May I ask, Anna, if you've seen the first one, which is the one I like particularly, The Three Musketeers d'Artagnan?
Yes, I did when I was little as well. I did. I remember I watched it with my grandparents as well and my mother, and it was amazing, just amazing. And also, I don't know if you guys know, there's also a movie which is for kids, that's with the Three Musketeers, and another one with Barbie and the Three Musketeers, since we were all talking about Barbie.
Yeah, Richard, you should have gone and seen Barbie and the Three Musketeers. That's much better in terms of Milady and much more realistic, it has to be said as well.
I haven't watched that one, to be honest. I did not watch that one, but all the others are, I don't know, work of art.
Fia van den Bogert has this French epic translated northwards to the Netherlands. Or is it a case of don't be ridiculous?
Well, I'm quite embarrassed to say that I've only seen the Three Musketeers, the Barbie version. So, yeah, I'm sorry.
And a great version it was too. Again, you know, clearly Richard missing out on the possibility of Barbeteers.
Did you see the outfits? It was pink, purple, blue. It was amazing. You just can't.
I think we should have a show especially dedicated to Barbie. I swear.
Yes. We can do The Princess and the Pauper, yes.
Yeah, she needs all the help she can get now. I mean, clearly she's been blown up quite literally by the joys of Oppenheimer in the awards season. So there we go. Natasha, one for yourself? Or is it a case of, well, it's in French? Why would I want to watch a movie in French about French people?
I always watch movies in their native language. I think that's the best way to watch movies. Richard, you're breaking my heart. Why are you breaking my heart? You remember when you took when we went through this first movie and you had to practically duct tape me to the seat because I was jumping up and down so excited about seeing that first movie. And now you go and tell me there's a second movie, but it's pants. What are you doing to my heart, Richard?
Well, I'm warning you that when you see this, not if but when, you will find that realism has rather gone out of the window and despite a very good cast, I have to say that it doesn't have the exciting ring about it. For example, take the camera work, that first movie. There's a wonderful scene near the cliffs of Dover where, well, two of the characters, one D'Artagnan is chasing Milady, and it's filmed from above, and this is really exciting. Now, they have a clip of this or something similar in this, and it's actually quite weak, so it's best to forewarned is forearmed.
I mean, Richard,
I'm still going to watch it.
Yeah, I mean, are you going to say that Natasha's going to have a similar kind of experience to how she felt about the Marvel Universe after Thor: Love and Thunder? Because I think if memory serves, I think you're still recovering from that, Natasha.
We don't talk about Love and Thunder. We don't talk about Love and Thunder. That broke a lot of things for me, a lot of faith.
Yeah, very true. Sarah, who in many people would be Milady, would you actually go for this, or is it a case of, I just don't know? If Richard's given it a 5.
I'm hearing things from everyone, and, you know, I was glowing inside when Anna was saying what it evokes for her. And, I mean, they are dealing with doing another story outside the main story that we all know. So perhaps Fitzwilliams is being a little bit harsh, because I think it's a bit like people that love The Hobbit or Narnia Chronicles, isn't it? It's a similar thing. It's going to evoke a certain type of person who, whatever it is, they won't be disappointed, because it's a bit like I love watching Dad's Army when I feel a bit down. And I think it's that. And so, therefore, I don't think they've strayed off. Perhaps, you know, if the acting's not good, well, then, you know, that's not right. But, no, like Natasha, I'm rather busy at the moment. But, you know, if there was nothing else on, I didn't fancy anything else at the cinema, I'd go. But I did go and see One Life last night. I managed to get there. And, yes, I cried. And, yes, I think it is the most fantastic film. But what I think was so moving, I took a whole load of Kleenex with me from all of you, because I knew I went on my own because I knew I was going to disgrace myself. And I think the heart-stopping moment for me, and the thing that I thought was so wonderful, it offered hope. And when they said to him, yes, 665 children were saved, and you know the number of children that weren't, and I thought it was brilliant. Sorry, I've just got to share it with you. I thought it was brilliant that in his mind, he still has the picture of the girl with the baby that sadly didn't make it. But then, oh my goodness me, then when she says that line to him right at the end, I like swimming, I couldn't stop, because it's a life well led, isn't it? And I think maybe all those people blessed him with life, because he went to 104, and you don't do that for nothing. And the whole audience,
you know, 106, well, the oldest.
And I thought Anthony Hopkins' performance was absolutely, absolutely brilliant. And the personal thing for me, which was why I was pleased, my husband actually went to see Poor Things and was in another cinema watching that, was I'd just blown him up.
As I suggested last week, Sarah, go to see different things. You don't have to go to the same one.
And I said, this house, it's clutter, books, study stuff everywhere. And of course, it starts off with that, with all the clutter. But, oh, what a wonderful film. And Anthony Hopkins, absolutely, absolutely fantastic. I thought it was...
Helena Bonham Carter too.
Helena Bonham Carter. And when she's dealing, there were some individual performances, sorry to go on, but I thought was so brilliant, which heartwarming. What about the chap in the bureaucratic office when he's saying this has got to be done, and he just goes, oh, I'm sorry. And then when he comes back, that's actually got me crying. I don't know if that did it to you. When he comes back and he's got the last lot. And then, of course, we've all done it. When he goes to the station and the last train didn't get there.
Well, Richard, because you've eulogised so much about that particular area, which is so critical and important, including, obviously, quite rightly, actually, giving some useful sort of plot points across the whole thing, we've sadly actually got very little time to actually go for Richard's solution to, obviously, the Princess of Wales and King Charles, obviously, being out of commission, shall we say, which we know Richard is secretly saying this is probably going to be an ideal opportunity to actually give more responsibility to Prince Andrew, possibly to get Harry back to actually take some of the shoulder of the blame of the line of that sort of thing. And it could be a whole new way of actually spreading the load for the royals from that point of view. I mean, you know, a real opportunity, I would have thought, for Andrew and Harry, Richard, to step into the breach.
Well, firstly, we expect King Charles to be working in hospital for most of the time, to be out pretty soon and back rather sharpish. I do have to say regarding this, though, it was a real shock to receive statements from both palaces within 2 hours on both these issues. And I mean, the Princess of Wales, it's abdominal surgery. I mean, apparently she will be in hospital between 10 and 14 days and will take quite some time to recover.
I did say that Meghan shouldn't have been taking those dolls with the pins with her, honestly. You know, it was a good end in tears.
Alex, what an extraordinary summary from you. I do have to say I'm going to get my revenge by just having a brief mention of the BAFTAs. It looks pretty clear that it's going to be Oppenheimer and it's going to be Cillian Murphy and it's going to be Christopher Nolan for Best Director.
So we don't need to watch it, which is good stuff, Richard. So
I do think with Best Actress, we're going to get Emma Stone, Davine Joy Randolph, who we've been talking about as the cook, the caretaker in The Holdovers. She and also Robert Downey Jr. for supporting. Regarding the Best Foreign Language Film, it's a lot of... How do you choose between 20 Years of Mariupol, which is devastating, the Russian attack in the city of Ukraine, and a documentary that couldn't be bettered, and Anatomy of a Fall, which is...
Richard, we don't know, so we won't try. For the moment, to Anna Paschanel...
There are a large number
of... Richard Fitzwilliams, I might have to mute, but haven't, thank the Lord. Fia van den Bogert, Natasha Wanton, and Sarah Huntley, many thanks. And keep watching those movies.